Good evening. Welcome. This is the Glen Allen School District 41 Board of Education regular meeting, May 27, 2014. The time is 7:30. Mr. Ellis, could you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Alger?
Here.
Mr. Bochensky?
Here.
Ms. Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Ms. Black?
Here. Public participation. Is there anyone?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, and limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. Personal complaints and criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and/or interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not prohibited. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate D41 staff representative for a response, if a response is warranted. First one, please, Mrs. Stecker.
Vanessa Lucas.
Hi, are you ready?
Hi.
Okay.
Yeah, my son was in class and was where I considered him safe under adult supervision. I have to be screened to get into the Forest Glen building, yet my son could go on inappropriate sites to game if he wanted during school hours, as do many other children. He was also able to observe inappropriate material on others' computers during class while a teacher worked on her own computer. Where was the technical oversight and adult supervision? My son has been more open to me regarding what he saw. I'm disturbed that he was able to view the obscene and disturbing content while this should have been blocked and he should have been protected. I ask that you only allow certain approved sites and not access to the entire World Wide Web while you are unable to monitor and protect our children. Protecting the children should be of utmost importance. My child cannot unsee what he saw, and he's feeling insecure where he should be feeling safe in school. And I have to say that I have an older child that's going to be graduating, going on to Glenbard West, and this didn't happen back then, but they also didn't have all the access, and if you can't control it, it should be shut down. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Anyone else? Whenever you're ready, Jeff.
Sure. Just one quick comment tonight. I was hoping to be at the finance meeting before, but apparently it got canceled. And what I really like to hear about from the superintendent would be, during your report, the method that you were able to pay the assistant principal's position for next year. That was for the money taken out of the budget, but it wasn't last year. I guess it wasn't this year. So. But if you can let us know how exactly that person was paid out of the budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Hi, Sophie. Whenever you're ready.
My name is Sophie Dempsey. I have 3 children currently in Forest Glen. As you all are aware, there's the issue at school that occurred at our school, so I feel very close to home with it. I'm lucky enough that my children are mindful of things and communicate with me on a regular basis. But I am concerned that my husband
and I... What issue?
I'm sorry.
What
no,
issue?
It's the access to online.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
I am concerned that my husband and I both work full-time, and my children are entrusted to the school for a good portion of the day or of their time, and I'd just like to know what measures and what processes are going to be put in place to avoid this in the future. I feel that at home I'm able to control it, and I understand at school there are a lot more children and probably less adults per children to be able to keep on top of it, so I'd like to feel some sense of comfort and security that there are measures being put in place with the access so that I know that my children aren't able to access that information. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I think it bears worth saying now that obviously this issue is a very serious issue, and the district has been aware of it since it happened. And there's been measures taken, and there will be further measures taken. I believe there's going to be an update tonight as well, if you all want to stick around to listen to it. Okay, anyone else?
Angel Oakley.
Hi. Go ahead when you're ready.
I have three kids at Northside, and I'm only here because it's extremely important to me, and I haven't seen that the action from a perspective of the technology access has been changed. A couple of months ago, my son opened up to me about a sensitive issue. Our conversation unraveled like a ball of yarn, and it started with the admission that he had learned a lot about sex from other boys on the internet. What concerned me the most was the type of information that he learned, and that the bulk of it was on school property. This wasn't sex education. This was normalization of pornography in our elementary school environment, which led to greater curiosity through online search. We have a good family. We have an internet-savvy family. We strive to instill our kids with good principles, be honest, be kind, make good choices. Yet we acknowledge their kids, and they don't always make the right choices, especially in situations with peers. While my husband and I were very disappointed that our son made poor choices in Google words that he had heard and participate in unhealthy conversations, we were grateful that he came to us and that he is now able to be on a better path through open communication with us. I will tell you that this has been an incredibly painful situation for our entire family, and primarily due to the content that he was exposed to. This is not Playboy of yesteryear. On the bright side, this experience has opened up very honest conversations about sex and its place in our society. It has prompted us to have tighter securities at home. We currently whitelist. Previously, we were blocking, just like the school does. We have policies around internet activity. We inquire about internet policies before we leave our kids in anyone's house. We have continued conversations with the school about what is going on and what's going to happen with the school. I've met with the principal, superintendent, IT director over the past month and a half, and trying to figure out what is going to be done. While I'm grateful that they have acknowledged that this is a serious problem, it has not been communicated that it's a serious problem to the parents. It's very much been marginalized, and it's been seen as a couple of kids that have done something. And after talking with a lot of other parents, I have been told many other stories of kids misusing the internet in various different ways, ranging from pornography all the way down to bringing Minecraft on zip drives to play during class. So my question is, how are our kids using technology, and is it really serving them in their education? These red flags continue to remind me that we need to have change. We know our kids will hear things from other kids, but we don't expect them to be able to Google and get pornographic images that are very harmful for them at this age. The Child Internet Protection Act calls for schools to protect our kids from this content. In recent talk with the IT director, he said that he would be proposing a new solution to the board in October for implementation over the holidays. This is far too long. I have done a great deal of research in the area over the past weeks, and Securely is one of the products that appeared to be best suited for schools. It's a cloud-based solution that can be implemented in a weekend. Teachers could have the ability to whitelist websites with ease. There is greater flexibility, tracking, which we currently do not have tracking, or alerting. There's nothing that's going to happen when a kid searches something right now other than another kid reporting it or a teacher observing.
That's time. Could you leave your remarks with us to summarize, please?
I just have two more sentences. NetChecker is also a great resource. It has doctoral-level teachers that have approved more than 360,000 websites for educational use, and certainly 360,000 is more than ample for elementary use. I hope that you will take this issue very seriously by discussing it, and you need to discuss it openly. We feel like you haven't discussed it because it hasn't been on the agenda other than the initial meeting. So we hope to see action. Thank you.
Thank you.
Shane Hubbard.
Yeah, Shane Hubbard, and I have three kids in Ben Franklin. And I actually come to this with a little different perspective because I'm an information security professional, so this is kind of what I deal with all day. So I know it's very hard to have a 100% track record with security. That said, from what I've heard, I haven't heard the whole story, but it sounds like we're not using the tools that we have right now. We're using them happy web gateway. Is that correct? I might be too geeky, but... so that was mentioned. We blacklist now. Whitelist can be considered more effective for security. There should be some kind of alerting system, so even if somebody tries to search for something but doesn't get through the firewall, they have to set off an alert to the teacher, the principal, or somebody. There should be a full postmortem of this incident. It should be shared with parents to see what went wrong, what went right, what can we do in the future. That would be a normal... And then, do we have an information security policy for the school? Is there? I couldn't find it online. Is there one that I'm missing, or you can address that when you talk? There should be a written, you know, information security policy, how you protect, how you use the firewalls, how you patch your servers, all that kind of stuff should be taken care of. And like I said, I do this for a living, so I'd be glad to give any advice or any help or anything you need.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Go ahead when you're ready.
It's me again. My name is Teresa Milich, and I'm preparing for further at Forest Glen. And I did recently send out I spoke at the last board meeting, and I also did a follow-up email to superintendent of the board and all four principals. And I would echo what others have said in terms of how this being treated as an isolated incident. And since I have spoken to more parents, I have heard that there are multiple breaches that occurred. First breach occurred that I know of, recently was with my son, who showed pictures of nude women by simply typing in naked girls. And you think in the elementary school environment, doing that would not be allowed, but it wasn't flagged. And I guess 10 weeks later, I'm still not comfortable that we have a solution that's going to address this. I believe there have been multiple and serious breaches of the internet, and as a parent, I'm simply not comfortable with even the remote possibility that my son could be exposed to porn in an elementary school environment. And per the note that I sent out to you recently, we don't have the safeguards that you would expect to have in place for internet access of grade school students. So I would echo some of your thoughts. And that it is clear that we need to change the level of controls and create a proactive situation so this will never happen again. How can anyone look anyone here in the face, a parent in the face, and say it's okay if your child is the oopsie and sees pornography? I'm not comfortable with that at all. And I think most parents, I think technology folks that I've talked to have said that approved sites is really the only foolproof way to go. And it is my hope, not my hope, but I think it's the responsibility of the district to actually have a plan in place and approved, ready to roll before our students go back to school in the fall. That's it.
Great, thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Moving on. Presentations, reports, and initiatives. The PBLs.
Karen's, yeah, Karen's going to lead us in that presentation.
Opportunity, but tonight we really wanted to take this opportunity to highlight the work that has occurred around problem-based learning at each of the schools. And so here we've got, I'm just going to introduce them now, and then they're talking to different slides, but Christina Kellum, our technology specialist at the district level, working at all four schools, will be speaking to the fourth one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nika Guerrero, a Churchill teacher, and then Heidi Hahn from Hadley, John Bauer from Lincoln, and Sarah Rodriguez from Franklin. And Sarah has a couple parents who will also be speaking, and she'll introduce them when we get to that point. But I won't read this to you. This is really a definition of problem-based learning. But what I did want to highlight is really the focus on problem as opposed to project. One of the end results may result in some type of project, but it's grounded in an authentic real-world problem. And the other thing that I think is important to mention, too, is that it connects to the standards, connects to what we're already doing from unit planning and that. It's not, we're going to stop everything we're doing and just do PBLs. It's kind of our day-to-day work. This is really the process we go through, sorry for the small print there, around problem-based learning. It starts with that essential question or that authentic problem. And just to kind of highlight, you can read around there, but you'll notice that it says the 21st century human characteristics. They're a very big part of what our kids experience while they're involved in problem-based learning, what the teachers will emphasize in that. To the left, those are what we've referred to in the past as the four C's. They are also part of our 21st century learner characteristics, but those would be important components within a PDL process. So, and I know Dr. Gordon has mentioned before, and we've talked about it previously, but for a few years now, teachers have been working with problem-based learning or project-based learning. So our hope is really to build upon that previous work and some previous training. And so those first few bullet points really kind of highlight how we will extend the work we've already done. How do we take problem-based learning to the next level? So probably some key areas there are really kind of thinking of things as field experiences to learn more about what they're studying. The other thing would be to take it to panel, where they're really presenting their ideas in front of an authentic audience. So not only will we build upon that previous work, but our hope is then as we take it to full implementation this next year, or at least that first year of full implementation, it will be grounded in a 21st century teaching and learning document. The group that's up here has done some work with that document and kind of vetting it. We've had a lot of eyes on it. CIT has looked at it. Team 21 will be looking at it next, as well as PDT and that. So that document will kind of ground our work in the future. And then the PBL coaches role, they will be a big part of that planning process and networking with the community, educational partners, business partners, things like that. So that's kind of now, and I'll talk about next steps at the end, and then I'm going to kind of turn it over to John Bella.
Thank you. I'm not a podium speaker. I'm a walker and talker. So please, follow me. Thanks again for the opportunity. I'm just going to highlight a couple of these key benefits from a teacher standpoint. And the second one on there is just huge. To me, engagement and motivation is everything. We have the greatest curriculum in the world. We can have great tech, we can have great resources, but if they're just not that interested or engaged in learning, it's really tough to keep them in. Now, I think, Mr. Eskelin, you came in and stopped in one day when we were doing some, what normally in the past might have been boring research. Okay? Did they look bored to you?
No,
I hate to put you on the spot. So even when it comes to the research component, which in, you know, especially fourth and fifth grade, not always the most interesting thing in the world, because it's authentic, because it's real, it brings a high level of interest. So that kind of goes into that next one where it just taps into their sense of wonder. And I always try to do that as a teacher anyway, but you often go through kind of an inquiry process with it, where you're getting them to listen to those thoughts in their head, those questions that come up, instead of the teacher just always generating everything. So, I don't know. What do you think? Where could we go from that? So instead of the teacher kind of being that sage on stage with the PBL, I don't know. How can we find that out? So even from kind of the teacher standpoint as well, it kind of has a triple benefits to the teacher, because we're all learning together, and that's where the whole learning community comes involved. Last but not least is differentiation. I'll just give an example. I have a refugee student that just came to Lincoln. He has been with us, I don't think, quite a month, 3 weeks. And so for my fourth grade class, I let them kind of create their own interest-based PBL here the last couple weeks of the year. I'm going to touch upon the fifth grade Eco PBL in a little bit. But I just wanted to see where they would go with it. Just on their own, just on their own interest, knowing Joseph and our class, they wanted to do one, well, what's it like? What challenges does a new student here to the country face? So here they are, interacting. And boy, you can just see they're interviewing him. His eyes are like lighting up. And again, he speaks very little English. So we've got another student in one of the other teachers' class that speaks his native language. So we're going to team up. They're going to write up a list of questions. They're going to share with them. They're going to talk to the ELL teacher and see from her standpoint, well, what's it like when someone's, you know, right here in at Lincoln School facing all of this really tough fourth grade stuff. So just a little snapshot into what it looks like. Yeah. All right, so did some visuals. I'm a visual guy. It helps me remember things. So this is kind of in action, both from level 2 and level 3. You can see as I'm learning, they'll do presentations. They're doing research and note-taking. They're doing actual sampling of, hopefully not too much bacteria, but on the playground equipment. So just a couple of samples. Level 2 did one, how can Lincoln students stay healthier and miss less school? So they're actually trying to come up with ways of how we can help students stay healthy at school so that they don't miss school so much. So they're going around asking us tough questions as teachers all around the school, like how often do we wipe down the desks and how often do we do the keyboard? So it's very, and again, the kids are loving it. So they're writing down all the information. And those level 2 are second, third grade. So they're again, it's just really a neat experience to see. Then my fifth graders, we're finishing the year with, how can our essential question was very broad. How can we make the Earth a healthier place? Because there's a lot of things going on with climate change and global warming and our water issues. So what we do at the PBL is, well, how can we make a difference? How can we pay it forward here in fifth grade? So they're thinking of different programs that they'll present the panel for student recycling at Lincoln. We don't really have a student recycling program. So we have arts subcommittees going to present kind of how can we use recycled products for arts. We have a cost-benefit math group that's going to talk about like how much things cost and what the advantages are going to be. But a much more eloquent way to talk about PBLs would not be from me. It would be from one of my students. So hopefully our technology will work here. We'll put the smart board on. Can I just touch it?
All right, and what kind of PBL are you working on, Sonny?
I've been working on the PBL of what kind of different art you can create with recycled materials. And I think it makes you smarter because you get to, first of all, it's your choice, so when it's your interest, you tend to research more, and you're learning while you're having fun. That's also what's fun about it. You get more researching skills.
Could have said it better myself. Thank you.
Good job, John.
Hi. Again, I'm Nikki Guerrero at Churchill. At Churchill, our question has been, how can we prevent the summer slide, the learning loss over the summer? I am a math and science teacher, and this is occurring in the literacy classes, but I polled some students, I talked to teachers, and they said overall the same thing John said. It's been very engaging. They haven't seen this kind of engagement in a while, the teacher said. I asked some students, and their eyes lit up. They had bright smiles on their face, and they said, it's awesome. I love it. We get to work in groups. We get to solve problems. As a teacher, I've had some kids send me emails with interview questions. What can I do over the summer to, prevent the summer slide? So I was able, as a teacher, to be an expert to them. And actually I had a kid in class raise their hand and say, Miss Guerrero, are you going to give us something for the summer so that we don't have a summer slide? So I've seen it in my classroom. I've seen it with my kids. And the teachers, again, said it has been so engaging. And we have a video clip that shows the struggle, just the negotiation that occurs. It's not a perfect process. Just like in the real world, when you're working on a problem, you will face challenges. So here are some students
Every 20 questions I'll tell you to go outside and exercise.
No,
we can give them all the information, and then they can make the answer. Yeah, that's what was our idea.
So we're going to know we need coordinators, like in Learning Together, we need coordinators.
Yeah,
coordinators.
No, that's us.
Yeah, we look up there.
We're not.
We came up with the idea.
Yeah, we came up with the idea.
We're not here.
I don't know how that's going to work, actually.
Well, we thought it was.
Yeah, it's not worried about it. Okay. So,
what do we even look up?
Hot for dinner.
Yeah, exactly. But what about a banner?
Yeah, that's what my idea of banners.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, the banner would be easier because the paint we would have to pay for.
Yeah.
Or the students
also. You put two banners on each side. Yeah,
but so I think we should make like a big. blueprint of the things like.
Do we need
I mean, of the Churchill bus, yeah.
And Christina, talk about Forest Glen. Forest Glen, the level 3 literacy teachers took the opportunity to open up a conversation by presenting the students with the problem, how can we safely and effectively use technology in the classroom? They brought in experts. Our tech director came in as an expert, and Erica was presenting to them as well as an expert. And there was a lot of good conversation that happened in the classroom. The students have been coming up with solutions that range from a student agreement that the student has to sign with the teacher, how to arrange the technology within the classroom so that a teacher has good view of all the laptops, and also lessons that they can prepare for the younger students to help them understand internet safety. The students are getting ready to present the panel. In fact, that starts tomorrow. So probably some of us in this room are actually going to be, the panel of experts for the students. And when I went to class, I asked one of the students to kind of describe the PBL process. And so this is in the words of a level 3 student discussing this.
So at school, we're making a PBL about safety on technology and how we could help our school. And I think it has changed and helped our school a lot because it's kind of fun, and I hope the panel takes our ideas and uses them well, because I think that we all worked hard on this and we've put research into it and we've practiced performing and we're really ready. Most of us are kind of ready and we're a little nervous, but we really want the panel to like our ideas. And yeah.
We'll see how it goes tomorrow.
We kind of have two things going on at the moment. We have an 8th grade classroom that took on that entrepreneur aspect and are looking at, through that kind of Shark Tank format, what kind of new businesses would be good for students as well as good for the Glen Ellyn community. And a couple of the ideas that they came up with were clothing stores, particularly for Glen Ellyn students. They also were looking at, Glen Ellyn apparently doesn't have an ice cream store downtown, but they do have a shaved ice dealer. So they went downtown, some of them, and talked to the shaved ice dealer to see, you know, what were some of the drawbacks to being in a cart on the road. Would he rather have a business? What kind of things had he looked into? How much would insurance cost for something like that? And how much would it cost just to have his cart on the street? And they were also looking into a restaurant that would be more for students, that didn't have the older Glen Oak atmosphere or the bar-like atmosphere of a couple of the downtown businesses. So they're kind of presenting those ideas to a panel. But the big one at the school at the moment is the 400 sixth graders involved in how can we alleviate the anxieties of the incoming sixth graders and their parents. And so the students went out, they surveyed the students at all the elementary schools, they surveyed some parents, and they reflected on what they had known from their past experience. And they came up with a whole bunch of different topics, the lockers, the lunchroom, bullying, teachers, homework, PE, what about the Chromebooks, and nurses was a big red flag for them too for some reason. And then they kind of divvied those topics up that were of importance so that they could touch on it, research them. They went out and read a bunch of articles about how the stress on middle school students. And so then they also, our video shows a little bit of a breakdown of the topics and how some of the kids approached that.
Incoming sixth graders might be feeling worried or stressed and scared about coming into Havlin. This video will provide information about book genres that will relieve some of the concerns about which books they should read.
Our PBL is about theater arts. And our problem is that theater arts isn't really introduced to the kids as much as other activities are. So we wanted to introduce this to the sixth graders and how they will enjoy this.
In elementary school, parents had the chance to see what their kids did during the day by going like to open house and learning all those things. But in middle school, parents don't have that opportunity. But Third Thursday is a perfect way for parents to see what their kids do during the day.
So those were just a couple of the topics. The sixth graders went to panel last week. The LMC was greatly used. It was a buzz. Dr. Bruce came over and graded. I think Lori was there as well. I know Christine was there. And so they were very excited about it and did a very, very, very good job.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, at Franklin right now we have a few PBLs going on. We were lucky enough this year to win a PEP grant for a school garden. So to tie in with the level 2 human body and health unit in STEAM, the level 2 team took on, can we sustain a vegetable garden at Franklin? And we were lucky enough to have our troop of Boy Scouts come in and build up our raised beds. And today, actually, all the level students went out and started planting in the garden. So this will be an ongoing problem that level 2 will continue to work with next year, and then the new group of students will come in and continue to plant and use this space as an outdoor classroom for hopefully 9 years. So they're currently working on that. We also finished a bullying cycle PBL in the fifth grade gifted reading class. It was brought to BLT by a teacher that, you know, maybe we should review bullying at school again. And my class happened to be reading books that had a theme of cycles. So I had the kids brainstorm cycles they could think of, what could we change, and actually it kind of meshed in perfectly that the bullying cycle, they thought maybe we can break this cycle at Franklin. So they did research, they talked to in-house specialists at our school about PBIS and the psychologist and the social worker, and they came up with a plan and presented to a panel of administrators at our school to kind of reinstate some bullying procedures for the kids and to reintroduce some of those bullying cool tools that we use in PBIS. And then also another one that was more on a Glen Ellyn community problem-solving adventure. The Glen Ellyn Library contacted our school and asked if there were students that would be able to help them figure out why tweens are not, you know, in big attendance at the library. Why don't they go to programs? Why aren't they coming to check out books? So a group of students volunteered to work pretty much the entire month of April during their lunch hour. We met every day at lunch. It was fourth and fifth graders. We had 15 kids. We went on a field trip on a Saturday and had all the kids come. They toured the library, got kind of a behind-the-scenes tour. We looked at all of the spaces they have now, and then they took that information, brought it back to school, and we worked at lunch to figure out, surveyed 4th, 5th, and 6th graders in the district to see if they liked the way it looked, the programs. And then they presented to, I think, 4 members of the library staff, and about a month ago, and they were going to take some of their ideas into consideration, and when they're reviewing the physical structure of the library, take those under advisement from our kids. So those are the exciting things going on at Franklin. And this is Erica Dudley. She's a parent at Franklin.
I am a fifth grader at Ben Franklin, and she's been part of the PBLs for a couple of years now with Mrs. Rodriguez, and met a couple different ones this year with other teachers, and I can't speak highly enough about the PBL. My daughter's pretty quiet, doesn't really talk much in class, but in a PBL, she was in one of the PBLs where she had to present to administrators, and she got up there and they videoed it, and I saw it, and I was like, wow, that's my daughter. She's up there, and she's, you know, able to talk, and it was great. And then she's also been able to take on some leadership roles in the PBL, where I think in a regular project, just a quieter project, she might not step up to do that, but she's been asked to, you know, why don't you be the leader for this group? And she stepped up to do it, and I've been really impressed with the PBLs and how great it's been for her.
Thank you.
And we did want you to hear from the parents' perspective and kids' perspective, so that's why we've got the videos in there.
Cool.
So here's really our next step. The next step that we'll take this summer next year, there'll be PBL coaches training on 2 days that'll be to really kind of help guide the work next year. They'll come together as a group and we'll be making some decisions and just kind of doing that whole planning process and how we'll meet with teachers, things like that. We then have 3 options for PBL training for all certified staff and administrators. The dates are up there. As of today, we have 215 administrators and certified teachers that have already signed up. Marie, maybe about 300 if you included everybody, so we're close. And the default is if they're not going to do it in the summer, we would move them to August so that everybody will have the training. And the reason why we're going to move 1 day into September is just there's those 4 institute days. We could really only kind of steal 2 of them because it's only 2. We will then be doing training for all the support staff, including our custodians and office staff around the PBL. Some of the guidance we've been given is that it's really important that they understand the work that's occurring, the impact that it might have on their work day, and how they can really support us in that. So then next year, the coaches will be doing planning and ongoing support with the teachers. They'll come together because that expectation is that every teacher will be doing 2 PBLs next year. We'll probably need to revisit kindergarten with a half-day program and maybe just 1, but we'll kind of see how that goes. But in general, too, and some of the questions that have come up, can kids be kind of working on multiple PBLs? And the belief is that, yes, they can and they can manage it successfully. So those are our next steps. And again, it'll be grounded in that teaching and learning document. And then, Mike, can you go to that last slide? And this is a Franklin student, and she does a nice job. There were a number of Franklin students, but we kind of put it down to her because she really kind of captured what we hope for all of our kids. She's very sweet.
PBL was really fun and it made me feel really good because when I think about what I'm doing, it makes me feel like I'm doing something for the real community and this is a real life problem, so I'll be making a solution to something that's really happening in our community. And also, if the plan works out for our PBL and we could walk by it, I could have the bragging right to say, I helped do that. I was part of doing that.
That's what we hope for all of our kids, to be able to kind of get the work that they're doing. So.
Great. Thanks, Karen. Any questions or comments for Karen or the team?
Well, it was mentioned that I was invited by one of the teachers over at Forest Glen to go to the PBL, and I grabbed my folder because I just wanted to show the work that went into this. I received a set of 12 questions that they sent to me in advance. Actually, I asked for them so I could be prepared for the audience. And they were, this is again the 4th and 5th graders, really tackling a really challenging topic, as we've heard tonight from parents that are here, and how absolutely it's critical to have that kind of dialogue and to have the kids involved in that conversation. So I was, first of all, honored to be invited to go over. It's probably because they know I have a flexible schedule. But let me just read just a couple of the questions. How can our PBL calls change in the district? And we talked a lot about them being change agents, and that when you take on the responsibility of asking the question, that you yourself become a part of that solution. In your opinion, how can we use technology safely and appropriately? I had asked Mike if he would be willing to come over with me to address some of the technology pieces, and he did that for all of the sessions that we did, so I think we were good partners in that. Would the Board of Education be willing to spend money to make sure this issue doesn't happen again? I mean, just really thoughtful, both from the perspective of, personal ownership, but then also when they're thinking about budget and that idea of constraints on any solution, and talk a little bit about that as well. What have we done in the past when there have been other issues, if there have been other issues? And this one, we had some great conversation around, why doesn't the district take away laptops? Why don't students just use computers in the computer labs? And they themselves talked about, I asked the teachers if it would be okay to pop a question back since it's problem-based learning. And so talked a little bit about that from the long-range plan perspective, our technology rollout, the importance of being able to access technology, that in fact they're digital natives, that description of kids growing up knowing technology, using it. And one of the students in the afternoon section said that they want to have the ability to have access and independence, but also recognize that they have to have accountability for it. So they wouldn't want to go back to the small room in the computer lab where only so many kids could have access, or in our classrooms where we had desktops set up and you could fit maybe 5 or 6 in a classroom at a time. And so just a space issue, as we always go back to space here. So I just want to thank Forrest Glenn for the opportunity and to let, for the record, and to let parents know here how thoughtful, how respectful the kids were. They literally were sitting for 45 minutes on the floor, legs crossed. At one point I did have the group stand up and stretch, and then we sat back down. But we're really willing to talk to each other. And the last question they asked was, should repercussions, the consequences be harsher? And we talked a little bit about that, and a few of the children talked about the fact that maybe they should be, or that maybe we need to create some student-to-student accountability and contract. I think that came up earlier. So it's just some really thoughtful discussion. And, one of the questions I wanted to ask but was answered is, we use the term authentic a lot. I use it in the field that I work in, and sometimes I think that sounds jargony. But I'm hoping that, as we all saw this tonight, but also I know from sitting in those classrooms with these children, that in fact they see this as a very authentic way to create change for themselves. And I told them that whatever they came up with, and tomorrow I'll go back and sit in on an afternoon panel, and again, just to exhibit the organization, there's a rubric that they'll use for the panel, and the learning standards are listed out too. So Sharon, to your point about problem-based learning being an integrated part of the curriculum, we can't lose sight of that, because it can't feel like, oh, let's do this fun activity, because then it loses its whole intention and purpose. So I offer to them on the board's behalf that as they come up with solutions, that we'd like to hear some of that if they're policy-related or other. And so they feel like they have a voice in this. So I again, thank you for being part of it. To be invited to do it.
Okay. Any other questions, comments?
I got one quick question, and I don't, this might be going against the grain of, a lot of positive feedback in the kids, but how do they handle failure? How do they handle a recommendation not being accepted? How do you close that loop in saying, oh, it wasn't accepted, they didn't think it was a viable idea, whatever panel you go to, is it presentation answered and that's it? Or do they get something that kind of feedback, right? How's that feel?
I was just going to say quick, I can then Sarah, you can go. There's really not a winner.
Right.
So it's not about whose idea are we going to say that's the one we're going to go with and that. Because panel members would give feedback. Part of the feedback is on the presentation itself and then on the idea. So they might ask questions in that. But what I heard a student at Franklin say when we kind of asked about it is that instead of just, you've done a project, here's your grade, it's done, is by having that conversation and having questions asked, it kind of validated the work that they had done. But Sarah, do you want to
I agree. And when we did the Boldy presentation, they were presenting items that they wanted to have the students use and have teachers use to teach the students. So they did get feedback to make them more appropriate for putting out to the students. So they were okay with that. And then for the bookstore, or not bookstore, the library, the ladies from the library did a great job of saying, okay, well, we could do this for this reason, or, and the kids knew going in, not every idea was going to be chosen. They were just putting their best effort forward and what they thought was the best idea. And I think we did get great feedback from the panelists, in my experience. And with the vegetable garden, we told them, because they were second and third graders, so they're going out there like, I want carrots. in the garden, and all the kids did research on a different vegetable. This is at a, you know, lower level. So they presented to older kids their vegetables, and they knew going in not everything could be planted. We only have 3 beds, and we had discussions of it'll be the most appropriate. It'll be what we can grow, what we can harvest, and they knew going in, and then they were okay with the, you know, okay, we're not doing radishes. No one's going to want to eat radishes, even though we researched them. You know, so I think it's going to get easier as they get more used to it. And they're used to the positive feedback. They are already such growth in presenting that you wouldn't believe it. I mean, even just through a year or 2 years of doing it, some students doing something like this is not hard for them, where it might be hard for us.
Yeah.
So I think it's just going to get better as we keep going.
And I can give an example from the sixth grade PBL that Heidi mentioned, which was about the incoming sixth graders being concerned. There was a group, because there were many, many groups that presented, as you can imagine, with 400 students involved in the problem. There was a group who presented as practice, and during the practice, the feedback that they got was really that their final product was not acceptable in its current form. So they had to, well, first there were some tears, it was girls, they cried, and then they went back, and in one day, they refilmed and re-edited their video. And when it was then presented to the real panel, I was one of the panelists at that time, and I saw it, and I told them afterwards that their presentation was so much better the second time because they gave me a lot more information about the product they created and why they created it the way they did. But ultimately, I did tell them that only half of what they had created was really usable because it was just the approach that they had used. So they still, in a way, got bad news, ultimately, about their work, but it was better than when they originally started. So I think that the second time around, they were able to handle it. They didn't cry that time. So ultimately, it was a learning experience. Was it the best outcome they could have hoped for? No, but I think they handled it really well. And I did talk to the teacher afterwards, and she did kind of go back and check with them and say that everything was fine. So they'll do better next time. Absolutely.
Yeah, and Patrick, it's a true growth mindset.
Mm-hmm. Go for it. We haven't gone to panel yet, but I've experienced the same challenge as a teacher of that win mentality, mm-hmm. and just getting the kids to shift from my bridge held the brick, so I won. And where I'm trying to get them all to is, but how can we make the bridge better next time with less materials or critical tuber? And that's a whole new way of like an approach. That's that learner character. And think critically and reflectively. Mm-hmm. When you're 9 and 10 years old, you know, it's like, you know, I want to get it done. I want to be fast with it. So the same thing happens with the PBL. Even when they're working within teams, you're going to have some that just want to be finished. And be, okay, yeah, I did my research. But just to get them in that reflection piece when they're done with the teacher and, like, the panel feedback, to me, is crucial. I mean, when we went to visit other schools doing it, that's where deep learning comes in. Well, because you sit down, it's not confrontational. Going to make it better next time. What do you think? What do you think went well? So to answer your question, that thing of, well, you know, did the panel approve it? Did I win? It's more than that. And you won by the learning and that, I think someone uses it, that agent of change, that feeling of you can impact change and that you can be a tool for that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. One more question, Sam. We're rolling through this, right? And the PBL's picking up steam. We have coaches coming in. What do you guys want the coaches to do next year?
I would say the biggest part to start with is supporting teachers. We want them to be grounded in the standard. So what does that look like? Connecting into the new NGSS, the science standards, is going to be a huge part for me as a math and science teacher. Being hands-on with the kids and myself. I love how she brought the rubric that you guys have used at Forest Glen. Just having some options for resources.
Yeah, that's the key. I would love to have the luxury of unlimited time. Either during the school day or after the school day to line up panel members, create really cool, engaging field experiences, to have current, everyday kind of resources that will be related directly to their topics. So we're going to lean on the PBL coaches in a huge way to do that.
So a coach should be a resource, not a dual teacher, whatever.
But yeah, to me it was, you know, it's dual role. They're half kind of that coach position where not all teachers have had the same. Like I took a PBL course that was more project based a couple summers ago as officer of the district. So I've had a little bit more hands-on experience with it, but not necessarily every teacher has. So part of the coach's role also will be helping teachers learn how to do effective PBLs. So again, the summer training, just, you know, being in school and being a resource where you have questions like, they're arguing, what do I, you know, so just because it's muddy, you know, it's not a simple prep. So the term coach is a good one because they're going to be spending time coaching the teachers on how to get through it and how to help the students learn with it. So I think it's both the resource and that kind of that media planner, I don't know how else you want to call it, just you're almost like a community link. Yep. So that's half, and then half is the coach.
Okay, thanks.
Karen, I have a quick question. How many people signed up for the training?
215.
And what was your goal in terms of that? How many staff and teachers were you hoping to sign up?
Well, there's about 300 if you include all of the administrators, and we're including all the, I mean, even Dave Carmato, Director of Buildings and Grounds, we want him to participate in that. So I have not sent a reminder, and every day I go in, more people will sign up. So we'll give them a couple of reminders, and then if they haven't signed up, they'll just automatically participate on an institute day so that everybody gets the training.
Okay, so it'll be real pervasive throughout the...
Right, but we run in by 215 people to sign up. I thought it was really,
that's
really good.
I have one.
Okay. Go ahead, Joe.
You know, clearly that one of the biggest things we keep hearing is the engagement of the students, and you can see it in the videos, and that's awesome. And you see the children collaborating and he's fighting and how you deal with that and all that, and I think that's great, and it's real life experience that adds to all the excitement. One of the questions I have is on the presentation part. What skills are we trying to teach them? And I find it amazing, my daughter's in second grade, she's given so many presentations, so far, and I don't think I gave one before sixth grade. You know, so experience goes a long way, and the more you do, it helps. But what tools are we teaching them about Q&As, about, you know, you talked about the sixth graders change their materials. That's one part of it, but are we going in depth and trying to make them better presenters?
Listening standards that come into play during that panel presentation part of the PBL. They're part of the English Language Arts standards, the Common Core standards.
Okay.
So there's that whole strand that they would be grounded in as well. And lately, the PBL that I've been involved in, we have had different teachers come in. Even we've crossed schools. The literacy specialist at Franklin came in to present to the sixth graders, and the literacy specialist from Hadley went to Churchill to present to the level three students, specifically about presentation skills. So that is being addressed directly.
Okay.
And then the students are being told what does a panel presentation look like and how is it different from a regular presentation. And they are expected to be able to respond to answers. We talk to them about how do you respond if you don't know the answer? You know, what's a nice way of saying, I don't know, instead of being shocked and embarrassed. So, yeah, we do cover all of those parts with students.
Thanks.
And again, with presentations, you know, the three keys with me when we're here: slow, clear, loud. It's very straightforward. And what I try to do is also, either on the iPads, is videotape them so that they can see themselves. Because again, you know, having come from corporate America, and I have also been a coach, you never believe anybody what they tell you until you see yourself on film doing it. I don't think I did that. So it's very powerful when they're like, I didn't know I swayed like that. So again, you know, I try not to be hypercritical with them, but all I ask is at the end of the year, are your presentations better and you feel more comfortable standing up and communicating with people than you were at the beginning of the year? So.
Dean, anything? John, go ahead.
No, please. All I was going to say is I appreciate you doing this tonight and starting to put. We talk about it a lot, so this helps, you know, turn it from conceptual to practical, and tying in the STEAM components to it help out a lot too, because people ask about that. People always ask, what is the STEAM, and you know, what is the 21st century? What's PBLs? And I think that maybe even making this available somehow to the district would be helpful. To other parents, they could go out there and take a look at this.
Team 21 does plan to find a way to kind of showcase the PBLs, yeah. And we've already, it's part of our planning for next year, was to, and so we're starting to come up with ideas of what the coaches are doing so that parents can firsthand even experience at their school. So, and John, any questions?
Yes, thank you. I had a couple questions, maybe some more thoughts. That, so, you know, to me, the way I see, and I'm interested in your guys' perspective on this, because the way I see PBL or successful PBL is really where it's more of a student-centered approach to teaching than a teacher-centric approach, with a balance of, you know, making sure the teachers are teaching the right content, you know, and it's not just the kids. And it seems that that's a big part of the philosophy, is that it's student-driven, and it's not necessarily teacher providing content first, and then there's a nice clean problem that you go solve, and it's a nice clean answer. It seems that the way I've seen PBL, and again, interested in your guys' perspective, is that it's more about a student-led problem that may not be so clear, that may not have an exact answer, but gets the kids to think and work, and I like the way we're embedding the learning characteristics in this. And that to me is a very that's a big change from traditional practice of education. You guys went through it, and I've had some discussions with Paul and some other board members. You know, there's enough change going on that, you know, maybe part of the role that we need to look for is a change management. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we're looking for communication, but communication is a part of change management. Maybe we're to the point where communication is industrialized enough that role of communication needs to be, you know, percent change management, percent communication. I'm interested, you guys went through this. How did it make you feel? Are we going to have, and you know, to be completely transparent, are we going to have some change management issues deploying this out in the field and getting people to adopt it? And I'm kind of concerned. It seems like there's only 2 days worth of training, and I'm wondering, you know, do you guys see that as something that we need to be concerned about? What are the barriers that we need to be aware of that we can help smooth out from that perspective, if that made any sense to you?
I don't know that answer, but it's actually 3 days of training, and they'll experience a PBL. They'll do a field experience, so they'll know what it feels like on the learner side, but when they finish with those 3 days, they'll have their first PBL planned with some help in that. And then the coaches obviously would continue to provide that ongoing training, and a lot of that professional development occurs within the planning process too. So that would be some first support, but I'll let you guys
know. And can I just add that this is not the first exposure the teachers have had to this. John mentioned a couple of summers ago that we had a training, and it was probably more of a project-based system rather than problem-based. But that's something that a lot of people attended, and there's been a lot of pieces of that have been implemented here and there in the different schools. So it isn't as if people are starting from that June 23rd training and then people never have heard of this before. So
you would feel there's a low barrier to adoption.
Well, teachers they have concerns. Even teachers who have already tried it and been through a PBL, they have questions still. And that's what the coaches are there for, to kind of help them work through those issues.
Right.
And also, the coaches being able to collaborate with each other and go across schools would be a wonderful way to alleviate the concerns, mm-hmm. to combine forces, to have the kind of support that the teachers are going to need to work through the challenges that they face in the process.
Okay.
Yeah, I would echo kind of things you've said. I think the coach's role is, as a teacher, that's what I'm looking for. I mean, as far as supporting me. And I feel confident that our district is investing in the people to help with the process and not throwing another, you know, people say, oh, it's another thing to add. And I mean, obviously I'm on the PBL team, so I joined it because I'm excited about it. So kind of a who knows, but I feel very supported, and I feel really excited about the direction it's going personally, because like you said, it is a big change. It is something authentic, and then you can just catapult it forward into new areas. And I think it ties in with a lot of things we've already seen with our students. I have students present all the time during wind time projects they've done, and we see this all the time where you have a project and it turns into something different, where I had kids end up creating a how-to guide for creating like Excel charts and things, and they presented to kids, and that wasn't part of their project, but I think our kids in our district are naturally looking for more, and so I don't see it as a heavy burden. Again, I'm really excited about this, so it's hard to know like your average teacher, but I think the coach's role is super important for us.
Right. And because those PBLs are authentic PBLs that relate to the curriculum and relate to real problems that the students have identified in the community or a teacher has identified in the community, it's all that much more natural for them to become involved in it.
Mm-hmm. I agree with what you said, John, about you wanting to be the student's problem and not something that the teacher has kind of just plopped in front of you as this problem. And I think that for literacy teachers, they're so lucky because things like the summer slide can come into play, and you can ground that in all of your ELA standards, and whatever you're presenting will have those standards tied to it. And then there's STEAM people who, we have the world and the environment and all these problems that are just out there, and these kids will just start looking, not that you want them looking for problems, but looking for problems to solve in their community. And I think we will be able to just keep getting better at, seeing something going on at Churchill or Franklin, right around in our neighborhood. And then knowing, okay, well, this fits in here, and we're just going to get better in that process. So I think they will be really authentic. I think that's very important, and it will be interesting with four elementary schools and a junior high to see what everyone does.
I think you used the right term, though. Everyone has to embrace change, and that's nothing unique. I'm just finishing my eighth year of teaching, and everything has changed, not just within our district, but our state. We're adopting NGSS site standards. So I equate it, it's very similar to owning your own business, where you're kind of, there's a little bit of on-the-job training, and there's a huge, uncomfortable level with that. So to, similar to the learner characteristics required of our students, our teachers do too, where we're going to have to be resilient and we're going to have to problem solve. And a little bit, I use the joke and I use it with my students too, that Mrs. Bauer and Mr. Bauer were wired very differently. She's a processor. She looks at efficiency and systems, and she wants as much information as possible. I will dive in the deep end and dog paddle until I figure it out. But not everybody's that way, and not every teacher is that way. So I think that kind of change component, as long as we continue to share with each other, and when we go to this training, the teachers hear that it's okay to make a mistake, which we've heard from Paul, and that it's the first ones, they're tough, and you have to kind of muddle through, and especially with the collaborative nature with the groups. And the kids trying to work out stuff. Some are working on teams as adults. Mm-hmm. That there's going to be personality conflicts and people that want to sit back and not do much. Another person wants to take over. So you get some of that too. But guess what? It's the real world too. So we're obviously all really excited about it, and we're hopeful that kind of infectious attitude. And we're not looking at it as one more thing. We're kind of looking at it, and especially for me from a STEM standpoint or a STEAM standpoint, it's kind of that umbrella of inquiry where I'm hitting those engineering and those math and those other things with them.
Well, it's nice to hear all your enthusiasm behind it, so appreciate that. And Karen, I don't think you need this to be successful, but I know partnerships and getting other people outside of the classroom and the school involved is important. So I don't know if that role is going to be at the school level or...
Coaches are, that's as John alluded to, that's going to be part of that other half of their role, is engaging business, industry, and university partners.
Right.
And Franklin has all going on right now at the level 3 STEAM and FGM. kind of, they were more,
yeah,
their stormwater, that
are they going to present that to us?
They're not being charged.
He doesn't want to be charged.
Yeah, we're not. Question one.
On that, so we're already, I've met with Renee Fugo from the Glen Ellyn Park District. She's done a lot of
those are the things that do the engagement and the motivation that you're looking for. Is that why I saw the kid on Saturday on that backhoe?
I was going to say, you better not be on the back.
So, Sam, I apologize. I'm going to break protocol in here, but Steve and Mary and Scott,
we're
all four here. I mean, you got admin, you got board, you got teachers, principals. This is a good path still going down, good positive feedback.
Getting very excited.
Very excited about it.
Okay.
That's that level of engagement. We walk in the classroom and see the kids digging into it. I mean, just a different feel of the classroom.
Along the same lines, I've had kids come to me with sending me an email asking me, I get emails from teachers because kids don't have email accounts. But I get, this is so and so from this class, and we want to know about this. Can you tell us about this, or why is this? And so that whole level of engagement again is, and we haven't done a panel yet either. We're going next week and. So I'm interested to see where they're at and how that's going. And it's just at one level right now that we are doing it. But yeah, looking forward to seeing it. It's definitely exciting.
Scott sent me a very cute email a couple months ago when he was helping his teachers get going on the summer slide. And he was, I can't remember what he was looking for, but he signed it. Churchill principal and PBL coach. He was working hard on their behalf.
Because it is a lot to ask of the teachers to be able to try and do what they're doing and to try and line up panelists, to line up people to come in and to do all the things. So to have the coaches in that role to be able to relieve that pressure from the teachers to be able to do this stuff was very important.
That's great.
And so I think that, and I don't think without them it wouldn't, you know, you can't judge the success yet. We're just getting going. But I think that's a definite necessary piece that we all felt was very important to move forward. So we're very excited to have those people in place and to see how we can start working with them.
I'm glad to hear that, because just some of the historic programs have been more less coaches. They're just there to kind of come in your classroom and do it, and you watch it, and then you're supposed to incorporate it. So I think this is a better
model. Side by side, you know, and the kids are very excited about it. They ask me all the time, are you coming to see our panel, you know, this week? Their, you know, our presentation, or they, you know, they're really excited. It's great to see.
Okay.
Piece that I love is that it's a grassroots effort by teachers. Started by teachers 3-4 years ago. And ultimately what we're doing is bringing a little more structure to it, a little bit of the thinking through the change management from a vision standpoint of a pretty comprehensive document that includes an action plan, professional development plan, access around incentives. What does that mean? It looks differently in the educational world. It's the incentives that you heard here tonight, that students, teachers are engaged. We're really following a change management cycle and guidelines to ensure that we have success for our kids. Because what we've heard from our teachers and students and parents, thank you so much for coming out, it is engaging. It is about allowing our kids those opportunities to think. That's, at the end of the day, that's what 21st century is about. It's not about technology. It's not about all those pieces. It's about allowing kids the opportunity to think, problem solve, ask questions, and be engaged in their learning. Own their learning. So they can turn around to you like the young lady on the screen and say, I made a difference. That's really what we're about, is making a difference. Making it, kids want to make a difference too. And that's why you see this type of engagement, because they're invested in it. So I just want to thank everyone for all their time and effort. Very impressive.
So two quick stories. Sorry to keep you all. I mean, I know you got other things to do tonight. So I've got three dogs, right? We all know that.
It's Jack
so.
Bauer's brother, man. He's got lots of
So anyway, I got a first grader, a fifth grader, and a sixth grader. And just a shout out to John. My fifth grader has been in his classroom for the last 2 years, and we can't say enough about him. And we feel that he is the prototypical problem-based learning teacher. So just a little shout out to John.
Wow.
So anyway, so,
thank you very much.
So she's in fifth grade, right? So my sixth grader is doing.
She didn't have to go through fifth twice.
So my sixth grader did the PBL, and it was the, you know, how can we get the fifth graders more acclimated in the sixth grade? So she had a personal interest in it because her little sister. And so my wife and I are like, well, you know, are you really excited about it? We're not really sure. And keep in mind, she's our T-shirt and shorts wearing girl every day. So the morning of the presentation, to our surprise, we go in a room. She's got a dress out, and she's got tights and shoes on. And she's very excited. So the kids were extremely excited about it, and I can see all your excitement about it by your voices and your body language. So I think it's going to be a great program, and we can't wait to see what happens next. So thanks for coming out tonight. You can stay.
By the way, Matt, you did a great job. I happen to be one of the panel members. I'm Matty Black. I'm like, I think I know your dad. And she did. She was dressed to the nines. Yeah. I was surprised at how many other kids had jackets, ties. But yeah, Matty did a great job.
Yeah, so what if you guys are doing? It was great because the kids are, you know, like John said earlier, the kids are engaged, and when they're engaged, they're going to learn better. So thanks again. And
thank you all.
Thank you.
Please feel free.
Okay, PTA Executive Council update. I saw Kristen here somewhere. There she is.
I'm here. Pardon my lateness. I was retrieving my eighth grader from Elgin. He had a baseball game. It didn't really hurt to us because it was pouring, so it was a little wet when he got back into the car. Anyway. I'll just tell you a funny story, too, because my sixth grader was all dressed up, too, for his PBL, and he was late. He was at the doctor's office the day before, so he missed the little part that it got postponed a day, so he didn't realize, so he went to school all dressed up, had a tie and everything. It was like the first hottest day, and so he saw his teacher, and he's like, do I look good? Does this look really good for my presentation? And she says, yes, but it's tomorrow. So he was a little bummed. He didn't dress up quite so much the next day, but it was great. First of all, obviously we have a ton still going on as far as PTA is concerned. All our schools right now have finished their elections, they're doing their installations of their new officers for next year, wrapping up with their thank you celebration. They also have year-end skate celebration over at Ben Franklin. Hadley has the movie trip for 6th and 7th graders and the boat trip for the 8th graders that they help fund. They have field day at Churchill, Olympic Day at Lincoln, and I know what Forest Glen's having a book fair. Is that correct? Coming up
Thursday night.
Come on over. Come
dunk the teachers.
That's what I know. And they also have a dunk tank. So
yeah, we have a dunk tank.
Be a lot of fun. And then I'm so glad that Liz is here because when we talk about the summer slide, one of the great events that I think that Churchill does is their summer send off. So she can take a minute and maybe tell us a little about the summer send off that you guys do to help with that.
Be careful.
Well, the summer send off is really Scott Sussis' brainchild that he came up with last year, and it was a way to address the summer learning slide that all students go through. And so we tried it for the first year. I also sit on our school's BLT. So we tried it last year for the first time. And it was an amazing event. We had, I think, 400 families, something like that, which is a huge turnout. The teachers put together booths. And I don't know that I could really adequately describe how much it exceeded my expectations for that event. So we are doing that again this Thursday. I would like to invite all of you guys to attend that. I think it's really... it's really inspiring to see the teachers kind of dedicate their free time to helping the kids get through the summer and what they've come up with. It's just the kind of thing that I think, you know, we could always use more of in the district. So please come. It's this Thursday from 5 to 7:30 at Churchill.
Thank you. Thank you for being here to talk about it. Also, from council perspective, we had our School of Information, and that is our big training. So that's where we bring in our current officers along with our incoming officers. So they have a little roundtable discussion, and then they do their district or their region
training called the Road to Success, which is how to be a successful leader in the PTA world. So that was a few weeks ago. Then last week we held our Salad Supper, and I'm not sure if you're aware, but we do offer a scholarship as part of our PTA Council to a graduating senior that is going into an education field. So we awarded that last week to a young lady who is going to be going to Illinois State. So it's very exciting. She and her mom came to the event. So we're very excited. About $2,600 is what we So just for that perspective, the Illinois PTA gives about $7,000 in scholarships, and that's across the whole state. So we have a nice size scholarship. So. And then lastly, I just want to take a minute to talk about someone in the room this evening, just to thank her. She's been a very supportive person of the PTA. She's thoughtful, creative, knowledgeable. She's a huge team player, professional, and a huge wordsmith. And so I just wanted to thank her from all the PTAs and from PTA Council for all that she's done over her time here for us, and that would be Julie Worthen. Thank you so much for everything that you've done for us.
Great. Thanks, Kristen. Nice job. Okay. Action items. The consent agenda. Are there any items board members like to be removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Okay. Hearing none, I may have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes the human resources personnel report, which we've got the updated version, the blue copy in front of us this evening. Employment recommendations, internal transfers, union exempt compensation, the finance facilities and operations report, including the treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, the school district payment order, vandalism damage report, disposal of surplus property, the 2013-2014 FOIA report, the appointment of a school district treasurer, and other matters, including the approval of board meeting minutes, the May 12, 2014 Board of Education regular meeting, and the May 12, 2014 Board of Education regular meeting closed session minutes. May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Moved.
Motion by Mr. Ellis, second by Mrs. Nelson. Roll call, please.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr.
Wojcicki?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay. Superintendent's recommendations. At the May 12th, 2014 meeting, the board discussed the following recommendations for board approval. The Hadley math adoption, the adoption of Larson Big Ideas, an online textbook for grades 6 through 8 at a cost of $67,693.13. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Motion. Second.
Motion by Mr. Pachinski, second by Mr. Alger. Discussion on this?
No questions for Karen. I just want to thank the teachers who came to the last meeting at Hadley to give the presentation, as well as do a deeper dive on kind of where the program is and where it's going, and also to give kudos to the math department, because in part some of the push at the high school level has come from really us adopting some higher level courses, and so I think that's really important to call out. So it's always good for us to see that we're on a curriculum review cycle, which is which we hadn't always been on, and so it's just good stuff.
I'd like to echo Erica's comments about the presentation at the last meeting. It was something that we brought up at the finance committee when Karen did the initial presentation, because we kept hearing that this was teacher-generated, all, you know, it was piloted and all that. And it was very important, I thought, for us to hear it as a board, and also for the public to hear how much time they put in and how much thought and collaboration was done for the recommendation.
Any other comments?
Thank you, Karen, for being adaptive to their ideas. You went in there with one idea, and you came out with another, but that just shows the open-mindedness of the administration. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, it did concern me a little bit when I think the first thing out of our math specialist's mouth was that we hadn't had a textbook in 6 years. So that,
they had opted to do ancillaries. And
right, and I think the staff rallied around each other, and made some good choices, and this is obviously a very good move forward. So, okay, roll call, please.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mr. Owens?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. The motion carries. Okay, the 2014-2015 school board calendar depicting the regularly scheduled meetings on the second and fourth Monday of each month, except on October 13, 2014, which is the Columbus Day holiday, and May 25, 2015, which is the Memorial Day holiday. Meetings will be held on the Tuesday following each of these holidays. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Elger, second by Mr. Escalante. Any discussion on this?
Just that we don't forget that we talked about offering to schools, how do we say that, the opportunity to host a meeting if they had something particular they wanted to present, like Chris Abbott's presentation at Hadley and that type of thing. So we can just make sure we keep that.
Mm-hmm. Great. There's no change. It's always the, it has been the second and fourth Monday of the month, so it's a continuation of last year's schedule as well.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Motion carries. The Churchill site work, the bid packets related to the Churchill site work. Bid packet 1-31, the earthwork / site utilities work to be completed by S&K Excavating and Trucking Incorporated with a low bid of $999,900. The bid packet number 1-32A, paving work to be completed by Schroeder Asphalt Services Incorporated with a low bid of $43,440. And bid packet 1-32B, landscaping work to be completed by Berry Landscaping with a low bid of $49,600. We have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation.
Motion.
Second. Motion by Mr. Ellis, second by Mr. Bochensky. Any discussion on this?
Just one comment. You know, obviously we have a budget and a plan for this program, right, for phase one, and just we're going to be approving, you know, expenditures along the way.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice if we could maybe just have some tracking so we understand. You know, it'd be nice to just get a report. Are we on budget?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we've done, I mean, we've had a great success record of our projects coming in within budget.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, quite frankly, one of the bigger projects that we've done in a long time. And as a board member, I'd like to make sure that we don't have to put all the pieces together to say, oh yeah, 800 here, 500 mm-hmm. here. That we know that we're tracking our budget, so there's no, you know, surprise like, you know, some other entities have had where all of a sudden it's an incremental dollar amount. So,
yeah.
I'd like that to just be a part of our
absolutely
we're approving this to say.
We asked that exact same question at finance last time, and we have an action item deliverable to get a Gantt chart and all these milestones, where we are budgeting, put your guide to, so where we are, our run rate, and I know finance was canceled this time, but.
And let's just make sure we're communicating in our meetings so that there's no surprise.
I'll make sure it's on a.
I know we're going to run into something, possibly.
Yeah, absolutely.
May not take us over budget, but we want to make sure that that's been communicated and everyone's aware.
John, I'll have it on as a regular item. From here on out, I'll be working with Jack and making sure that we have that
nice
item for you.
Executive summary.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah, and Jack is from FQC, is here tonight, so I'm sure he heard you say that, John, and he's nodding his head. So.
And again, I'm not looking to create a bunch of rework.
No,
it's, you know,
no,
it's a monthly
thing.
That was going to be a monthly part of your report.
It is part of the regular monthly,
right.
And it's time to start doing that.
Right.
With this recommendation tonight, just anecdotally, we picked up about another $35,000 in additional contingency below, in addition to the previous below budget item we picked up. So we continue to be on the right track. But I'll give a detailed report at the next meeting.
And, you know, again, just extrapolating on that, maybe, you know, if there are any risks that you're seeing, just let us know ahead of time in this report just so that we're.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, I really do, because they'll come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'd rather be transparent and upfront, let you know they come.
Right. So that's, it's sort of related to this, but
you know. No, I think it's a great ask, and Finance Committee had as well. So we'll make sure that's a standing item once a month for Jack to report out to the board where we're at.
I mean, eventually put it on the website, you know, communicate it. Mm-hmm. Just need to make sure people know where we are, what we're doing.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on this?
This isn't related exactly, but it's about Churchill, and it's just something to put on radar. I was at the last, I was liaison for Churchill PTA, so I was at the last meeting, and I had a couple people ask me about the walkway discussion, about having walkways replaced and the cost and all that, and I explained it as best I could based on our last conversation, but there was, undue concern that there wasn't going to be coverage and kids were not going to be covered for the elements. So I'm not sure how that, you know, why that was raised, except that I think it was read in bullet order.
At Churchill?
Yeah. So just FYI in terms of that.
Thanks.
Yep.
Okay. Anything else on this? Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Owls?
Yes.
Mr. Fenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Buchanski?
Yes.
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 Ms. Nelson.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. Okay. Superintendent's report.
First, again, just want to recognize the group for coming out and presenting to the board, the community on PBLs. Did a fantastic job. Leaned over and told Dean that, you know, it's nice when the team just runs and they take it and they answer all the questions a million times better than I could have ever answered them. So I just really appreciate everybody's time and effort in that. I think most everybody knows, but Jen Law, her last day with the district was today. She may still be here. Jen accepted a new contract with Indian Prairie School District. I believe it's 204. I can still get my numbers a little messed up. So Jen will be starting with them tomorrow. We've had our posting out for about a week, 10 days now. It'll close at the end of this week. And we'll start interviewing candidates very shortly after that. But really wish Jen all the luck in the world. Really has been a great director for us for the past 5 years. So just appreciate all of her time and effort and energy she spent for the for our students and families and community. Talking about the internet safety, I'm going to have Mike give us an update where we're at, what we've been doing from that standpoint. But I recognize the anxiety within our parents. I absolutely appreciate parents coming out and speaking on it. They've reached out to me. They've reached out to Mike. They've reached out to a number of individuals. So I really do truly appreciate that, understanding that technology is one aspect of it, and that's really important. But I see it as three legs to the stool. We also need to have staff, and we need to have parents, students, all working together on this piece. Mike's going to give us a detailed update on where we're at with the technology. We're going to be convening a group of educators, their tech guys, other district staff, to really talk about our policy around handheld devices, bringing devices from home. What does that mean? What does that mean to our district? What does that mean at the elementary level? What does that look like? We have to have an honest conversation about that, because we see it. It's a little bit all over the place, just being honest. You know, sometimes we get some waivers, some we don't. Some people follow it, some don't. So we really have to have a hard conversation about that. And it's not as cut and dry as some would like it to be, because some parents absolutely want their child having a phone with them all the time. Others are very comfortable without it. So it sounds easy, but this is a big conversation about what's appropriate. The piece that Mike brings up, we are a technology-rich district, meaning we have a lot of technology within our classrooms now. Very purposeful. Is there a need like there may have been a few years back where it was important for a kid to bring their phone or their own iPad? Those are the conversations what we need to have in-house around those issues. The other piece that we will be bringing together is a group of parents and community members on this issue. What does that look like? We'll be doing that in the late summer, before school starts, to really have that conversation, that open conversation. Because, again, I don't think we can paint all parents in that same area. Where is everybody at? We're not going to find that perfect ground, but I want to open up the conversation. I want us to sit in the room and have these hard conversations to really think these things through and ensure that we're doing the right piece for our district, short-term and long-term. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Mike to talk about the tech side of the house and what's that looking like and the steps we're making for that.
Sure. And before I get to that, I mean, communication is still a big component for all of us. So the first thing I've done is gone out to the buildings, gone out to almost all the schools. I'm going to Henry tomorrow after school to meet with the staffs, talk about internet safety, talk about some strategies they can use in the classroom, but also talk about some of the local resources that we provide to them already that are safe, vetted resources, whether the websites, servers that we house here in the district that we know are safe. So trying to build some more awareness and some more capacity there. Also going to do a much closer, take a much closer look at how often those sites are used and those services are used to make sure we're getting the best value for them. So maybe we should look at other services or other sites that we can look at. And like Erica had mentioned, had an opportunity to meet with a lot of three students at Forest Grinder. There's always a great opportunity to meet with them and some of the folks and talking with them about internet safety, responsibility, and things to look out for when you're on the web. Not everything is safe. So that was a great opportunity for us to perpetuate that in the next year as well. From a technical standpoint, we were planning on doing a full security audit of our systems anyway, not necessarily the content filter, but now we are going to start looking at the content filter. That's something that we've already begun researching other products. The one Angel brought up is one of those products that we're looking at as well. Do hope to have a resolution or some kind of recommendation that we can bring to the board possibly in the fall. If we do decide, yeah, we need to replace that content filter. So we'll bring in an outside consultant that will work with us to make sure our security, aside from just the internet security, but, that we're also well protected against another kind of breach of security to our network. And so those are some of the steps that we're beginning to take. These things will evolve through the summer and hopefully have a full report by fall. So, and as Dr. Gordon mentioned, having that conversation with other tech people, other staff members, but also like to be able to have a presentation for parents about internet security and safety, not just in the school, but at home as well. So to kind of ramp up of that kind of opportunity to have that dialogue, and not just with staff and students, but with parents as well. So those are some of the steps we're taking, and as I say, as they evolve through the summer, we'll have a more fleshed out recommendation by the fall.
Anything for Mike?
Yeah, I got a question. Mike, so is the whole whitelist, blacklist option on the table when this analysis is here?
Yeah, whitelisting and blacklisting is very common. Most of the content filter will provide that. And we do utilize whitelisting and blacklisting because our firewall blocks by content. So in some cases, a site that might be blocked, we will whitelist this.
Mike, could you take a step back and, for us non-literate blacklist, whitelist, could you?
A blacklist is just a website you're not going to be allowed to go to. It's a restricted site. It might otherwise be an open site. So in some cases, like a category such as games will be blocked by category, by a firewall. But a lot of educational sites have games, so it's considered a game site. So in those cases, we'll whitelist those. In other cases, maybe they wanted to go to a game site, but maybe there was advertising on that site that wasn't appropriate. So then one would block that site if there was any site that had inappropriate advertising. In most cases, those would be the sites we would blacklist, because most of these sites that are free are supported by advertising. So we blacklist those. Now, allowing access just based on a whitelist, yes, that's something most any firewall can do. It's just not something that we've employed as our only option for internet access.
And is it
too naive to say everything's off the table and we're going to build this from scratch. To say, okay, this website you can go to, Encyclopedia Britannica is number one. You know, is that?
It can be done, sure. But with most websites, I say like CNN, for instance, it's drawing from a bunch of different websites where it's coming. So to open that one website would also mean we'd have to open up all these other content source resources for that site. And in some cases, those, some of those sites may have things that we wouldn't think are 100% appropriate. It's a safer bet, but it's not 100% bet. You're never going to see something that's inappropriate.
So Paul, your recommendation is going to come out in the fall, but just like in the business world, there's levels to a project in terms of high-level design, business requirements, detail requirements. Is there something that you can package for us in terms of this is what we want to do, this is what we want to present at the end of the fall, this is a concept that we want, this is how we want to look at that concept, and this is what we want to present in the fall?
Sure, I think that draws from more than just me.
Right.
Kind of a recommendation. That's more of a philosophical overview of how.
Right. You're not just going to sit in a room and in a room and just start talking about this and say, "I'll build." You're going to say, "Okay, let's frame the question. How are we going to answer the question? And the recommendation?" You don't know what the recommendation is, but first you have to know what question you're going to ask.
There's a task force or project-based mentality to this that says we're starting with a set of requirements, our objective, our end goal, that's what we're going to work over the summer. That's my interpretation of what you've said.
Yes, as well as evaluating the products, making sure they're being fit.
But I think, and I don't mean to say this just because you're a technology guy, but sometimes technology guys think about products. We want to make sure we're thinking about our mission, our objective, what some of the parents here said. And then obviously the product will support that. But
we're going to need help in this. Yeah. It's not something you decide in a vacuum of technology.
I like that you're doing an audit, so that's good. I think we outsource that to Intel pretty much. Is that
on the content? Well, what I'm talking about is more than just the internet.
No, I understand that, but on the content internet piece, is that the piece that Intel is doing now for us?
Well, that's the piece that Intel provides the updates to the content filter.
Right.
So yes.
So we're gonna do an audit of that.
Evaluation of that, and also look at any other reports that we can also draw from that content filter before we actually make a change.
Okay, great. And then, I didn't know if you were finished.
Okay.
And then what I'm not sure is we had some folks come in and speak tonight. And I know we had an incident, and then I know you uncovered another site that was accessed at one point. So are these, I got a sense from listening, I wasn't sure if it was related to the incident that we know about. I got a sense some of the parents were saying, this happens more than we think, and other kids are getting access that they shouldn't be getting, or if this is all related to the same incident that we had at Forest Glen. Does anybody have any idea?
I have not heard any other situations, okay. But that does not mean parents or kids aren't telling us. I'm not saying it didn't happen.
I just couldn't tell if.
Yeah, I believe people are saying it is occurring. Kids are saying it's occurring, but we have not heard about it. I would look to any of the principals in the room. I believe we have not heard that same piece. Again, not saying it's not true.
Right. Okay.
Because what we heard is three. Yeah, two instances and one self-uncovered incident.
Right.
Three.
And that's not saying
there's
that other kids haven't seen it and they just haven't reported it or they haven't told anybody. I mean, I get that reality. Mike gets that reality out there. It's ensuring that we have a safe, searchable internet for our kids.
Right. And then just the final point, I assume this can be done, but understanding maybe what a second grader can do versus an eighth grader, and just maybe by user access type of.
And that's something we'll have
to. Yeah. That might help alleviate some of that fifth grade down problem.
Mm-hmm. Great. Just kind of that level of access.
Thank you.
When you look at products, I would encourage you, after spending 15 years in the software sales industry, to spend a lot more time benchmarking other school districts and other groups that don't have an interest in selling us their product. Because that's going to be one area. And, you know, we have a lot of people in this community who happen to have this type of knowledge, and maybe there's a way to even incorporate some of that in it to allow the parents to have, you know, some input into it. Mm-hmm.
I have a quick question. If a teacher asks for a particular site that they want to use, what's the process for that? It
depends on the site and what it looks like. So when we open that site to look at it, we're going to evaluate it on different criteria than the teacher will. Usually we're looking at where it links off to, you know, any sites that it can go to. Advertising is always a big one, because advertising is dynamic on all of these sites. So something that may look innocuous on that first view, when you refresh that page, might not look so appropriate, depending on the age. So those are the things that we look at. If we feel uncomfortable with the site to just open it, then that's when we would pass that on to either Christine Callum or even Karen to say, is this appropriate? Is this something that we should allow on the site?
So there's an internal test as well. Just one other point I want to make, and this has come up in some conversation with parents and also tonight even, and Jen's alluded to it a little bit, but that, you know, when this happens, the angst that a parent feels is different. And I happened to mention to Sam and Paul earlier today that on Sunday I heard a message, and I think it was just for me, and it was about the view that a parent has of their child as they leave a space, and then they look for them to come back in, and the urgency that they have as they look for their child, and then the relief when they see their child come back, you know. And I think that that's part of what I'm hearing in terms of parent concern, and so I appreciate that. And that there's a level of conversation that can be a part of the community and you know, teacher, principal, parent discussion around how do we use our internal resources also for parents who want to have a better script, approach. Every family is different. Hopefully you talked about that, you know, how it opens it up and it creates different pathways for conversation. But we're certainly a district that has a wealth of resources from the social worker and psychologist standpoint. So, you know, that's a piece that I felt in a little bit different way as I've talked to, you know, a couple of parents, too, and I think we heard tonight, so... I'm glad to have it on the table.
So Mike, is your recommendation due for implementation prior to the beginning of the school year? Does that make any sense?
It did.
Probably not. Just given the time frame, I mean, we only have a couple more board meetings up until July, and then we don't reconvene until August. And it still would have to go through the board process. I think it's going to be an expense that's going to require your approval. So that's a couple months, and then implementation and deployment is going to take some time.
So with that scope document, if you're using the term, that was my note, you know, you have short-term deliverables, you have long-term deliverables.
Yeah.
Can you, in your recommendation, say, hey, here's some immediate controls that we can put in place by the beginning of the school year, and they may not be the best solution, but they're the first step into the longer solution of the recommendation to be implemented in October.
And I think those are the conversations we're going to have throughout the summer. How fast can we lock this down? What processes do we need to change? What policies do we need to change to go now? And then that would be the recommendation we move forward with, and then build upon that. You do bring a recommendation or post that comment.
Okay. And when you say implementation process and the duration, what should be our expectation?
Just for timeline?
For timeline.
I'm thinking sometime in October or November.
So if you get an approval in September, usually they go through the two meeting process, then it's a 30-day implementation?
Well, three meetings. So
okay, three meetings.
Depending on schedule.
So then you're down to 14 days of to implement. And it's three meetings, that's whatever, that's 3 weeks, that's 21 days, and then 14 days to have it fully implemented.
Plus we have to communicate to teachers that change. So we're going to have to give them some heads up, maybe even some PD around that to make sure that they're comfortable with those changes as well. But it's going to take at least a few weeks for us to get it implemented and feel comfortable that it's in place and working properly.
When you're going to do some testing as well. I mean,
I don't want to rush it in there.
Yeah.
And then come to find it not implement properly. Yeah.
I guess the thing I'm worried about is if we're a roadblock, we can't be a roadblock.
Right. I agree.
In my opinion. I mean, if, you know, if you feel that you have to wait for three meetings and you feel you have to wait till we don't have a meeting in July, we have one in August, you just let Paul know and these guys will be here. No, I mean, seriously.
And that's where I was going with that question. Because ultimately, if we can crunch 21 days down into six because we have to post, this is an important issue. And we'll get a quorum here to make sure that it moves forward so that that 21 days can be condensed to whatever.
It's great to hear this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm concerned about saying that we wouldn't have a solution implemented by the start of school. That makes me feel a little uncomfortable.
Well, what I heard Mike say, again, correct me, is that some of the interest in the board is that there's, to your point, there's high priority. Here are the things we can do now. And they don't require X, Y, Z of our time or whatever it might be, but we can put those into place. Mm-hmm. And then there's this larger, you know, parallel, you know, research around content filter and that type of thing as well.
I heard that too. I'm just saying,
we don't want to be.
Let's get a mindset that says, how do we get this done?
Go fast.
When school starts again,
yeah.
And you might come back to us and say, not possible. We can't procure this tool or that tool. But to me, the mindset, the objective should be, let's get this done before school starts again, if that's possible.
And we're not the obstacle.
Yeah.
Our timetable three. You know, 3 weeks or whatever that turns out to be, three meetings, which would be 6 weeks, should not be an obstacle. But to Patrick's point, show us the game plan going in so we can see what's getting implemented along the way, along with the whole big picture.
And another part to this that has nothing to do with rolling out a website, you know, blocker or buying a piece, is this other important conversation to have eventually around. What are we going to allow kids to bring in on their own?
Because
we can lock down everything in the school, and as soon as a kid steps off of school with a smartphone, they got it all back. So we have to have something, some community buy-in on what we're going to do in that other part.
Yep, okay.
Anything else from Mike?
Mike, thank you so much. Talking about the board vacancy. We had an amazing 15 people apply for Sam's vacancy on the board. Really pleased with the turnout. Really pleased with the engagement. Community.
Sam made it look so easy.
Yeah, made it look smooth and simple. So again, we had 15 individuals who submitted their letter of interest, and those are Catherine Wilkinson, Chris Walter, Dana Sample, Edna Hevington, Elizabeth Skirvin, Jeanette Wagger, Jeff Cooper, Kristen Massey, Lori Taylor, Margaret De La Rosa, Morgan Lyons, Patrick Brosnan, Ronald Pippin, Stephanie Clark, and William Dolman. So those 15 have submitted applications for the seat. The next piece board needs to do is select a date to interview candidates. Originally, we put out two dates, Saturday, May 31st, and or Thursday, June 5th. So I had asked all board members to bring their calendars because I would love to have as many board members at whichever one it turns out to be, or if we need both of them to be able to conduct them. So I'd like to know just where the board's at.
When we give those dates, so Saturday?
Saturday, May 31st.
And what time we're talking?
We would talk 8 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. And we're having roughly 15-minute interviews?
15-minute, 20-minute interviews.
Is each board member interviewing each candidate, or are we taking two or one? Or
I would think the board would want to hear the whole. It's one person. So if Mr. Cooper were here, the board would be here to listen to
so
Mr. Cooper.
So this would be a special meeting.
It would be a special
we'll
meeting.
Open it up to public comment through the whole routine that we have to do, and
then we would close it.
Close it.
And then it would go into closed session.
Be in closed session.
The interviews will be in closed session.
Well, I'm fine.
I really appreciate the clarity, though.
So the Thursday time would be, or Thursday day would be what time?
Thursday we would do our 7:30.
Well, we could do it earlier if we...
Thursday,
June 5th, we can go to...
June
5th. I was just going to our normal time. I mean, you can go to...
For June 5th, I'll prefer later.
Okay.
All right, so just for terms of discussion, we'll leave it at 7:30.
All right.
So where's everybody at with the Saturday, May 31st?
I'm good with it.
One...
I am out of town at my goddaughter's college graduation, but I mentioned to Sam earlier that I can phone in, and I'm happy to do that, and I can probably do 90 minutes to
okay.
In the morning. But I would prefer if you started at 8 o'clock here, it'll be 9 o'clock bad time, so I can do I can work a 9 to 11 while I'm away.
Dean, I hear Joe, yes.
I'm good on both days.
All right. Sam?
I'm good on both. So, sorry, Eric, you're good for 2 hours.
9 to 11 on Saturday the 31st.
And then the Thursday, how about Thursday?
Thursday all night. Okay. Well.
It will be all night.
I'm good for the Saturday. Thursday, I would have to call in.
Okay.
I'll be on business.
I'm good.
Either one?
No.
Okay. Patrick?
Saturday, I'm okay. And Thursday, you said at 7:30?
Yeah.
Okay.
7:45 is preferred.
He said okay very quietly.
Yeah.
He wants it 15 minutes later.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think it would make a lot of sense if we did this on a Saturday morning. That way we could finish all the interviews without extending it 10. I don't know if that's really fair to a candidate to be.
Is it? I mean, is it fair? Or do we truly think 15 minutes? I know we want to try it, but 15 minutes. Are we going to be able to get 15 minutes of Q&A in? I mean,
not if we treat it like a finance.
Yeah, I know.
No.
Right? But I'm just worried about.
There may be things we could.
Well, to keep that in 15 minutes, somebody's going to have to be curt and efficient in both parties' point to say, moving along,
yep.
we're not here for a diatribe, we're here for clear, succinct answers and questions.
Yep.
And our board policy kind of lays that out, and it puts the onus on the board president to lead the interview and make sure that we're on topic.
Okay.
And
well, you're leaving, so you won't hurt anybody's feelings.
And there are some... True. And I won't worry about that.
Yeah.
There are some basic questions that are in the policy as well. So I think we'll be fine with 15 minutes.
It's just, you know, our potential candidates need to understand it. It's just, unfortunately, it's going to be 15 minutes, and it's bang, 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 next.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can speak to this before, but I mean, we're going to put together a packet.
Correct.
Of information for all 15.
Correct.
And send it out before the end of the process so they'll have a very clear idea of what's going to happen and some of the questions that will be asked. Not all of them, of course, but some of the questions that we're going to be looking for.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll reference them to the board policy, which will give them a lot of information, talk about the time constraints. Sam will start each of the interviews by kind of laying out the process itself, go through that this is the timeline, and then the 15 minutes would start after that. So roughly it's going to be about 17, 18 minutes once we have the pleasantries of a quick introductions and then hand it over to the candidates and the board to ask the questions.
So the tardiness of a candidate
will not jeopardize the next candidate's time. You're late 6 minutes. That's your.
You got to deal with Sam. Right.
Well, we can deal with that on an individual basis, but I don't think it's going to be a problem.
Okay.
I mean, if you're tardy by 2 hours, then that speaks to a bigger issue, obviously.
But and I think it's important that
minutes here, there, it's
that we are going to offer the opportunity to interview with you, with the board. I think that's important that we're offering it to all 15 candidates to have this opportunity to come before the board, so the board can make a well-informed decision on this important discussion or decision.
Yeah, I would recommend just some of the best practices for interviewing is that after a candidate's interviewed, that we have like a 10-minute window to quickly summarize, and then as opposed to waiting, right? So we probably need, if it's 15 minutes, you know, 5-minute setting it up, 10-minute debrief.
You need 30 minutes.
And then, yeah, so that we can say, my other assumption here is that since there are seven of us, and some of us have been through the process of interviewing for jobs, we might end up with like the top three candidates that we might want to talk to again. I don't know if that'll happen or not, but that may end up requiring another meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a backup plan, it might be good to try to pick another day.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, maybe it's that Thursday, June 5th. I mean, that we have that on the docket. It would be a much shorter amount of time. So a 7:30 is not going to be that tough for candidates. So if we use those 2 days, because I appreciate what you're thinking about.
Well, we're talking about splitting up the candidate pool Saturday morning, Thursday evening.
No, we're talking about one. Saturday is to get it done. Maybe I totally misread that. Yeah, I very well could.
I was thinking splitting it up so that there's opportunity for people who might work on Saturday to have an option to come on Thursday.
That's what I thought I heard you say.
I apologize. No, so I was thinking Saturday, and we would be able to. You are going to need a third meeting because the Saturday allows for a longer time. I recognizing that Erica's not going to be able to be there, but yeah, then we would add a third day to it. So I apologize. I thought I was hearing
Saturday.
I just want
the possibility for the applicants.
Why don't we start early?
We can start at 4 in the morning. I'm up.
I'm an hour.
I'm ready to rock and roll.
I'm good.
I'm busy.
You're keeping quiet over there.
So in the spirit of keeping us on track.
Thank you.
Are enough of us comfortable with two meetings to do the initial interviews, splitting the 15 into two groups?
And then when we get to Thursday evening, we can say, look, here's where we are. And then
there may be a clear person that everyone agrees on, or there's going to be top three, and then we have
to leave the option of that.
Well, thanks for the clarity, because I was not there. Maybe I had it in my mind what I wanted.
So Friday or Saturday the 31st, June 5th, Thursday, and then maybe a Saturday.
Saturday.
8 a.m. to
if you need back up Saturday as the time to come in and finalize.
Okay.
What about doing it?
That would be the 7th.
I would just go for it the next day and just do Friday night.
Well, there's a lot of activities going on the next day in this town.
On June 6th?
Yeah.
Saturday, I'm hearing Saturday once, hearing a Friday night.
Yeah.
Quick.
Saturday's tough.
Saturday the 6th in the morning may be doable for me, but it may not be.
Saturday the 7th.
Saturday the 7th?
Yeah, I'm not good until the afternoon.
Sorry, it is the 7th. Can we do it in the afternoon?
Afternoon is better for me as well.
Like 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock.
I'm open right now. On that.
4 o'clock Saturday afternoon. It would be three candidates, so you're talking. Now we could probably get it through 15 minutes.
It'd have to be in the morning.
Okay. So we'd pick another day. Is there a month? I don't even know what day we're running on to now.
Sunday.
We're not going to do it on Sunday.
So Monday.
Monday's
regular.
And Tuesday's Hadley graduation.
Can we adjust the 5th to a day earlier and then do the 5th for the final? Just the 5th.
I suppose that's an option.
You mean to do the 4th?
My calendar, Wednesday the 5th.
Wednesday the 4th.
We have the 5th, though.
I'm available on the 4th.
I can do that evening, yeah.
Go to the 3rd. 3rd or the 4th.
Well, how's the 4th look?
I forgot my phone. So
she's
I've got my brain back there working on it.
You did a good job
there, buddy. I know. She's amazing. So.
All right, so now we're at Saturday the 31st for round one, Wednesday the 4th for also round one, with Thursday the 5th for potential round two.
Correct.
Oh, of course.
Darn you. You didn't notice the eyes? You didn't notice the look? All right,
so
we're good.
That was an epic fail.
That was.
What time on the...
Take your glasses.
What time on the 4th?
So, 7:30?
Yep.
And that would be... Probably two, maybe three candidates.
But I can do it.
Calling in on the 4th
call
and
in?
The 5th?
But I can do it, yeah.
Okay.
But...
All right, so we're set?
We're set.
No, yeah, I just want to clarify for my column.
I do too.
If we can have some evenness in terms of, you know, we're doing 25-minute increments. If we need 5 and the 10 minutes for something or whatever, that's really 4 that I can do, and then I'll have to defer to folks from the rest.
Okay.
So if we can put the bulk,
Of it.
The Wednesday, that would be good.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So we have dates. We have time. We will notify candidates and move from there.
So we'll set up blocks, and they'll have to be first come, first serve for people to get.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we can do it. Yeah. An invite where people are selecting their times electronically. I mean, there's different ways to do it. I will kind of process through that and figure out the best way to invite people. So everyone has kind of that same opportunity to get whatever
Because they
slot.
Likely will have similar problems.
Everybody's going to have the, it is. Again, it's an offer to interview. I think that's really important. Anything else on this?
Thank you.
Okay. And then there's an interest amongst board members to look at the and revise policy 2.110, which is the policy that speaks about when a when the board president or any of the officers leaves the district for whatever reason. There are members of the board who want us to look at revising that policy, which would be more in line with board's legal counsel's recommendation. So we'll have that discussion on June 9th.
That's our next meeting?
That would be our next regular meeting. So I'll make sure that is on the agenda for board discussion.
Paul, what are we voting on or not voting on? On that discussion.
I think you would be looking at our current policy, 2.110, and then you would be looking at a draft recommendation on a policy similar, but it lines more along the ways that the legal counsel, the board's legal counsel, views the succession plan. So in the legal counsel's opinion, it shouldn't be a succession. It should be the board voting on their next president or the person who's left that seat. If it were vice president, the board would then vote on the vice president or the secretary as well. I think that's it in a nutshell.
So are we voting on a new policy, or are we voting on whether we're following our policy or not following our policy?
I think...
Because we won't have a new policy to vote on.
No, right. you would be ultimately having the discussion on the revised policy or the updated policy, and then the board at the June 23rd, if it moves out of the June 9th, the board would have a vote on June 23rd to say either I'm going to adopt this new policy or not, and if it's not, it just continues to move forward with the current policy. So you will be presented a draft policy.
Right. That was a good question, because there's interest among the board to take a look at current policy.
Yep.
Visa, Illinois school code. And then, so it's to John's point, we will have something to look at.
You will.
Okay.
You will. You'll have it hopefully sooner than that. But
yeah, I mean, with our special meetings, can't we just have it at one of the special meetings and whatever 3 dates we just picked?
As long as it's specified, we have to be really clear on special meetings. You just have to be lock solid on exactly what are you speaking about, so the public is well informed. Yep. So it can be. It absolutely can.
48 hours.
It has to be 48 hours.
I'm just doing Sam's last day is June 9th, so
yeah.
So
if there's interest in the board,
in perfect scenario, everything would be on Sam's last day.
Yeah, I don't think everybody can be here for the special meeting. We have some people that are.
Yeah, they'll be calling in one night and we'll be the other morning. So.
And I just want to clarify because obviously we've all talked, right? And as I said to you guys, I'm sorry that you guys feel this way about changing the policy. But I want to be clear on one thing, or at least I'd like to get an opinion if we need it. Because Erica said this, I don't think we're making our policy align with school code. Our policy is aligned with school code. Mm-hmm. We're aligning it with the opinion of an attorney for the board, not aligning it. I mean, the way I understand, and this is just what we need clarity, because from Erica's perspective, we're going to change the policy to adopt school code. I think our policy aligns with school code. I think our policy aligns with the Illinois Association of School Boards. And I don't think we're aligning it to those. I think we're aligning it to the legal opinion of our attorney. And I don't know if I'm right or not, but when I read Todd's memo, I don't get a sense we're aligning to a code that exists that we're not following. I think our policy does align with school code and the Illinois Board of School Associations. So I just like that clarification for me. And then because I don't want to...
I'll put that...
Yeah, I feel like we're communicating that we're doing something to align with code, and I'm not sure we are.
Well, our policy references school code,
right.
Illinois school code, that whole line of legal reference. It's all in...
Yeah, it comes from the school code.
Right, and it has, so it's referenced to Illinois state school code.
Right.
So the question is how that, the information from our legal counsel gives us the opportunity to look at how that is then enacted. And that's really the question.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to be discussing.
The school code doesn't say that there should be a reorganization meeting, right? That's the attorney's interpretation based on some of the words that are in the code.
Well, I think what we need to get is the actual written language, because what he provided for us in the memo was here's what Illinois School Code 10-13 says.
Right.
And it's about pro tem, vice president pro tem, president pro tem, that information. But what we're missing is the conversation that we feel we want to have around how is it enacted? And that's what he's going to provide for us.
And one of those pieces we can try to make available is having Todd attend.
Mm-hmm.
So he can talk to it much more eloquently than I ever will be on the legal opinion
of
the board.
We've had questions about this before. It's, he's Todd Faulkner's cub. He's, counsel to the board.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be helpful.
Okay. Good clarifying
questions. That way, to your point, John, we can ask questions to have clarification on it, too.
Yeah, I mean, we need to know whether we're doing this because of code or we're doing this for other reasons. So.
I appreciate it. Any other? That's it for me. Oh, Mr. Cooper, it's around the AP piece. You and I spoke last fall. I'm just trying to go over some written notes that I wrote. You and I spoke last fall. I wrote you an email describing the APs. We had again, this was last spring. So there was an administrative position here at the district that was reallocated back to the schools. So that was not a cost that the district was incurring because of that. That will continue to be ongoing. And then there was a pool of 5 teachers for staff to be able to help schools that were overcrowded or went beyond the targets that the board set. So 2 of those teachers were used to hire that other AP. So there was only there were two positions. One was repurposed, and that revenue was used to pay for that. And the other one was out of a pool of teachers that were being used to offset the targets. Mm-hmm. So those were the same pieces again for this year.
Okay. Anything else?
No, nope, I'm good.
All right. Board reports. Any reports this evening? There was no finance meeting, so no finance reports. Anything else?
Well, John and Dean and I were all able to get over to the staff recognition event, which is an annual end of the year program, which is great. Thanks to Lori Campbell's staff for putting that together. Jen Foster and Rich Brotner do just a fantastic job. And I think we all heard this, and I think the three of us all kind of lifted our eyes. But service recognitions ran from 5 years of service up to 35 years, which added up over 900 years of service in the district of just those who were being recognized for milestone dates. So just says a lot about the continuing, I don't know, tenure in the district. But just for the record, to read out the retirees' names, Myra Duffy, Grace Greenberg, Linda Hayward, Jean Nils, Peggy Proud Edwards, Sue Schoaf, Michelle Tannenbaum, Amy Wagner, and Julie Worthen, and just really great commentary from our principals who interviewed them and gave us some great background on who they are and what they've done and what they're looking forward to doing upon retirement. So it's a neat event.
Well, I appreciate you bringing that up. Just the HR department just did an amazing job. Yeah. Jen Prosser and Midge Brotnow just made this thing happen. It was a true celebration of people and their accomplishments and their work that they give to the school district, from our custodians to teachers. It was a really nice celebration. So I really appreciate the board members for being there. It was a great event.
I had two PTA meetings, end of the year stuff. I mentioned one already, Churchill. Thanks to Susan Blatter, who hosted the final meeting at her home, which is an annual event. Kudos to Churchill, and actually Scott announced this. They were the first District 41 school to get 100% registration for next year with the new registration system, which is huge. Because
wow.
It was, parents found out right after the winter break, correct? And then it was rolled out. So kudos to Churchill and Scott's being duct taped to a wall because as the kids registered, they got their piece of tape and he was duct taped to the wall. It was very fun. And then the other is that we had 97% registration by the close of the process district wide. So really significant move. And kudos to parents publicly for, you know, getting their registration information in. On May 27th and 28th, so that's tomorrow? Today and tomorrow, park assessment field testing. Tomorrow, Thursday, field testing and at the Churchill for the park. And then new officers for next year, President Kelly Hain, First VP Leah Coslow, Second Vice President Renee Savach, Vice President of Technology Shelby Bakken, Treasurer Wendy Garland, and Secretary Renee Blue, who's returning for a second. That was Churchill. Then I attended also, Kristen, as you mentioned, the end of the year PTA Council as a committee member. I attended, and Shanna Ferris hosted that. The scholarship awardee is Taylor Latsky, you mentioned, and just a tremendous young lady, and incredibly appreciative of her years in District 41, and actually attributed her interest in special ed and sign language in particular to an eighth grade language arts teacher she had, was Dr. Bruno, who used sign language as a part of her class and kind of raised that interest in her. So it's always amazing what one little piece will be. And then our new officers, correct me if I'm wrong, President Lori Taylor, Vice President Liz Vogel, Treasurer Linda Gallitz, and Secretary Kathy Bennett.
And then also the second Vice President, Sue Rossi.
Sue Rossi, right. Okay. And then that's it.
Great, thanks. Anything else? Any other reports? All right, upcoming meetings. June 9th, 2014, Board of Education regular meeting, 7:30 p.m. here at the Central Services Office. And June 23rd, 2014, public hearing and regular meeting, 7:15 p.m., also here at the Central Services Office. Are there any other matters to be considered by the Board at this time?
Yeah, there's one I'd like to bring up. You guys have seen the email from Steve on Hadley and some of the changes that are going on there. And Paul and I have discussed this. Steve and I actually discussed it a little bit, too. So, you know, I understand, I guess there were two pieces of that that concerned me, and it's not, you know, a board decision, but somehow I'd like to try to get some rationale, because the way I interpreted the email is we're going to have less math at Hadley minutes-wise than what we had in the past, and I know that to me that's sort of counterintuitive to where we're trying to go with math minutes. And then the second one was just orchestra, only because for those of you guys that are new to the board, you know, we made a change to orchestra, what, like 3 years ago, 4 years ago? You know, that change brought a lot of people in, a lot of discussion, and, you know, I felt that there was a lot of change that occurred and some work to get there, and we're changing again. And I think it'd just be helpful if we got, or at least, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but if we got some clarification around that and the benefits and why we're doing it, because I know I'm having problems explaining it to people who are reaching out to me about less math minutes and some things we're doing in orchestra that were different than what we did before. Mm-hmm. So just some kind of update at some point would be helpful so that we can better understand it.
Okay.
I haven't had anybody reach out specifically. There was a question, and I spoke with Steve about this as well, and that is the PE and health component and wanting to gain some time with that piece too. And actually Steve responded with some good feedback on some adaptations to that. So, but that was the only feedback I got from a couple
of people. Worried about the less math minutes. So.
Crystal, wasn't this talked about in the PTA Council? The one that I attended last month about
All right, public participation. Is there anyone present at this time that would like to address the board? No. Okay. The board has determined a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity, and also to discuss the selection of a person to fill a public office, including a vacancy in a public office, when the district is given power to appoint under law or ordinance, or the discipline, performance, or removal of the occupant of a public office when the district is given power to remove the occupant under law or ordinance. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mrs. Nelson, second by Mr. Ellis. Roll call, please.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Buchanski?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Okay. Motion carries. The board will be taking action on an employment matter when it returns to open session. And it's safe to say that employment matter will not be the board vacancy. So if anyone's waiting for that announcement, it's not happening tonight. Okay. The time is 9:49. Real quick. Okay, back in open session, 10:48 p.m. We have one action item. May I have a motion to approve the resignation, employment contract termination,
motion,
and independent contractor agreement as presented. Motion by Mr. Kenwood.
Second.
Second by Mr. Ellis. Any discussion on this?
No.
Okay.
Is your tape on?
The tape is on. Dean, we need a roll call, please.
Okay, so we'll go around with Erica.
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Drew?
No.
Patrick?
Yes.